Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Narches podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Evil Geniuses, The Unmaking of America, A Recent History is Kurt Anderson Political, Economic, and Cultural History of the United States from the Late 1960s to the Early 21st Century. Published in 2020 Than, the book argues that modern inequality and political dysfunction did not simply emerge from impersonal market forces. Anderson presents them as the result of a long campaign by conservative intellectuals, corporate leaders, wealthy donors, lawyers, lobbyists, and political actors to remake American capitalism in favor of owners, executives, and investors. The book combines recent history, policy analysis, cultural criticism, and personal observation. Its purpose is not only to explain the rise of market fundamentalism, deregulation, weakened labor power, and permissive antitrust policy, but also to show how nostalgia helped sell a backward-looking politics to a country that once associated itself with broad progress. Anderson writes for general readers who want a connected account of how economic rules, cultural mood, and political power change together. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the book frames inequality as the result of intentional political design. A central claim of Evil Geniuses is that the contemporary United States was not merely shaped by technological change, globalization, or inevitable economic cycles. Anderson argues that a determined coalition worked for decades to redesign the rules of capitalism. This coalition included business executives, conservative economists, libertarian thinkers, donors, legal activists, and political strategists who wanted to reverse the mid-20th century settlement in which unions, regulation, progressive taxation, and public investment limited the power of capital. The book emphasizes design because laws, tax codes, regulatory priorities, corporate governance standards, and judicial doctrines are human choices. By showing how these choices accumulated, Anderson shifts attention away from vague explanations such as the economy changed and toward institutions that distributed power upward. This makes inequality appear less like an unfortunate side effect and more like a policy outcome. The argument is concrete because it connects intellectual campaigns to practical consequences, including weaker labor bargaining power, greater shareholder dominance, and higher tolerance for corporate concentration. Anderson does not claim that every participant followed one secret master plan. Rather, he describes a durable alignment of interests that made elite enrichment seem natural, modern, and even patriotic. Secondly, market fundamentalism moved from fringe argument to governing common sense. Anderson devotes significant attention to the intellectual infrastructure that helped transform American political economy. Ideas associated with free market economics, corporate liberty, deregulation, and suspicion of government existed before the 1970s, but the book shows how they gained influence through think tanks, foundations, university programs, legal organizations, lobbying networks, and media channels. Figures such as Milton Friedman and the broader law and economics movement helped give pro-business politics a language of efficiency and freedom. This mattered because political victories require more than campaign donations. They require stories that make certain policies appear reasonable while making alternatives seem outdated or dangerous. Anderson presents the rise of market fundamentalism as a long institutional project that changed what politicians, judges, journalists, and voters considered normal. The result was a narrowing of acceptable debate. Strong unions, aggressive antitrust enforcement, high marginal tax rates, and major public programs came to be treated as relics, while tax cuts, privatization, shareholder value, and deregulation became signs of seriousness. The book is especially interested in how radical economic ideas were softened into everyday language. What began as an ideological counterattack eventually became the background assumption of both policymaking and business culture. Thirdly, the Reagan era accelerated a shift that later became bipartisan, although Ronald Reagan is a major turning point in Anderson's account. Evil Geniuses does not reduce the transformation to one presidency. Reagan made anti-government rhetoric, tax cutting, union confrontation, deregulation, and pro-business politics nationally dominant, but the book argues that the deeper shift continued after him. Later Democratic administrations accepted many parts of the new economic consensus, especially the belief that markets should lead, and government should mainly enable growth through competition, trade, financial openness, and technocratic adjustment. This bipartisan consolidation is important to Anderson's argument because it explains why the new order proved so durable. If the change had depended only on conservative electoral victories, it might have been reversed more easily. Instead, many assumptions of the right became embedded in mainstream liberal policy. The book connects this to the weakening of the New Deal and post-war consensus, when economic growth was more broadly shared and government intervention was treated as legitimate. Anderson is critical of the way social liberalism and economic neoliberalism could coexist. Cultural progress on race, gender, sexuality, and personal freedom advanced in some areas, while economic policy moved toward capital, finance, and corporate autonomy. That combination helped obscure the scale of the economic reversal. Fourthly, weak antitrust enforcement allowed new monopolies to define the digital economy. Evil geniuses links recent technology power to a broader collapse of antitrust ambition. Anderson argues that the United States became increasingly permissive toward mergers, market dominance, and platform control after policymakers adopted a narrow consumer welfare view of competition. If prices were low or services appeared free, regulators often ignored deeper issues of power, dependence, data control, and exclusion. This framework helps explain why companies such as Google and Facebook could become dominant infrastructure for information, advertising, and public discourse. Anderson does not treat digital monopoly as an unavoidable result of invention. He argues that technology enabled concentration, but public choices allowed it to harden. The book also uses comparisons between older industrial giants and newer technology firms to show a change in the relationship between profit and employment. Companies can now achieve immense market value and revenue with far fewer workers than earlier manufacturing or telecommunications corporations. That shift matters for wages, local economies, and political influence. Anderson connects antitrust to democracy because concentrated firms do more than sell products. They shape markets, influence law, collect data, control access, and set terms for smaller businesses, workers, creators, and citizens. Lastly, nostalgia helped make economic reversal feel like cultural restoration. One of the distinctive features of Evil Geniuses is that it does not treat economics and culture as separate stories. Anderson argues that during the same decades in which economic power shifted upward, American culture became increasingly nostalgic. He observes that fashion, design, popular music, entertainment, political imagery, and public memory often recycled older styles rather than projecting a confident future. This cultural stagnation matters because nostalgia can make regression feel comforting. A politics that benefits the wealthy can be sold as a return to traditional values, lost freedom, small-town virtue, or earlier national greatness. Anderson is careful to distinguish history from nostalgia. History examines conflict, complexity, and change, while nostalgia simplifies the past into a usable emotional object. In the book, nostalgia becomes a tool for protecting the status quo by distracting from material arrangements. Voters may be invited to mourn cultural loss while the economic rules are rewritten in favor of elites. This dimension separates Anderson's account from narrower policy histories. He is interested in how mood, memory, entertainment, and aesthetics helped prepare the public for an economic order that reduced security for many people while promising symbolic recovery. In conclusion, Evil Geniuses is best suited for readers interested in how recent American history produced extreme inequality, distrust of government, corporate dominance, and political polarization. It will appeal to general readers who want a broad synthesis rather than a technical economics text. And to readers of political history who are interested in the connections among policy, ideology, law, media, and culture. The practical benefit of the book is that it encourages readers to see economic arrangements as designed systems rather than natural facts. That perspective makes questions about taxation, labor law, antitrust enforcement, campaign finance, regulation, and public investment easier to debate as choices with consequences. Intellectually, the book offers a useful map of how ideas travel from donors, institutions, and intellectual movements into ordinary political common sense. Compared with similar books on inequality or neoliberalism, Anderson's work stands out for its cultural range. He does not only ask who gained wealth or which policies changed. He also asks why a country once associated with futurism became receptive to nostalgia, and why that cultural mood helped protect elite power. The result is a readable, opinionated, and synthetic account that is strongest as a connecting framework for understanding the last half century of American public life. If you would like to support Kurt Anderson, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.